In 3, 2, 1.
No doubt about it, our world is messed up. My guest today believes we can fix our messed up world one small act at a time. It's not just about the big gestures, it's the everyday actions, the small steps forward that collectively drive significant change. Pancho Timmons, author of Quick and Easy World Change, is here to share his journey, his insights, and how each of us can contribute to fixing our world one small act at a time. Join me now for my conversation with Pancho Timmons. Well, hi, Pancho. Welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, where are we speaking to you from today?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, great town. Good sports town, too. Yeah. And that's a town that's gone through a big transformation over the last 3-4 decades. So I remember Steeltown and where it is today. Beautiful city.
Yeah. Good, hardworking, all-American city. It's pretty cool how they took advantage of budding markets like the tech industry and medical research industry to kind of bring themselves back after the fall of the steel industry to keep relevant and be still one of the most livable cities in the country.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here, Mr. Timmons. And you know, what struck me when we were doing our background and our research on you, I know you're an author. You've got a book called Quick and Easy World Change, which we're going to talk about. So how we can fix our messed up world one small act at a time. But I love your byline and your title in your LinkedIn profile where it says world-class Parkinson's disease fighter, ragingly dyslexic, multiracial, doggy daddy. That's my favorite, with a fiendish plot to infect the world with kindness and acceptance. How did Pancho, let's go back in history and give a little background. How did we get to where we are today?
Okay. I think my journey probably started in college. My freshman year of college, I did everything I'm supposed to do. You know, I worked hard. I studied hard. I went to class. I did my absolute best. And the end of the semester, I was flunking out. You know, I was done. I thought, this isn't for me. I'm going to go home and find whatever job I can and just live in my parents' basement forever. So I was turning in my final college writing for the semester. Just, you know, I'm going to finish it out, turn in the paper, whatever. And my professor pulls me aside and I said, we don't need to talk. I get it. I don't belong here. I'm going to go home. He said, no, that's quite the opposite. He said, you're obviously dyslexic and obviously not getting any help. So you're an A and B student that's doing, you know, C and D work because you don't have an even playing field. And he took maybe 5-10 minute conversation. He talked me into coming back to school and getting the support I needed. And that was the difference between flunking out of college and going on to get a master's degree. I say I have two, but I actually have a 3-credit internship shy of 2 master's degrees. Changed the entire trajectory of my life. And I compare it to, you ever see Apollo 13? It's like a little explosive, gets them just enough to get them safely.
Keep them moving. Yeah.
So I felt like those little, like every interaction that we have with people matters, whether we realize it or not. Everyone matters all the time, all the day. So you might as well use that in best positive way you can and just be a decent person. If you have the opportunity to help, or just by making somebody smile, it can make huge differences. It reverberates in ways that we just couldn't imagine. And that also made me come to the realization that I was a person with a disability and I was in that world whether I wanted to be or not. So that led me to pursue vocational rehabilitation to help high school age people venture into post-secondary training or the world of work and make sure that they're prepared and had the resources that they needed to get out there and do the great things that they were capable of doing. And from that, I saw some potential to move on and maybe start doing some things. I did that job for the government and I went into the nonprofit sector to start helping more kids that way. And the last project I did for my nonprofit was about 500 kids. We were doing advocacy training skills for them. So they would get out and vote for whoever and understood how to have a voice for themselves and advocate, get the things that they needed. COVID kind of has us at a point where we have put that on the back burner and we still are having some rumblings about how we can bring the nonprofit back again. So it's going to happen. But in the process of doing the nonprofit, I didn't have any funding. A startup nonprofit's like, it's the worst idea ever. You know, like
just by its nature. Yeah, right.
For-profit barely has a 50-50 chance. A nonprofit is like, so I had to figure out some way of funding this thing. So I started doing as many networking events as I could and just putting myself out there to meet people, tell them this really cool thing that I was doing, this great idea I had, and just try to rope in some interest. And I was able to fund that nonprofit totally by corporate donations. never got a grant. Like the grant system, just they wouldn't even call me back, wouldn't even email me back.
Yeah.
So I had to do this kind of on my own. And by working with these companies, I started to realize other things they needed that were really in the realm of diversity and inclusion. Things that they were trying to do that I was personally very, very familiar with just because of my past work experience and with this other community then that I could connect these companies with to kind of meet some of their needs and train them and guide them on some things that they needed to do to meet some of their goals for DE&I. And that's where I went from COVID from like 2021 to now. Actually, it was 2019. I remind 2019, I did my first conference for DE&I, but it was a business conference. It was focused on what the return on investment is for businesses, why they should be doing this. What is the money being on the table here? How does this benefit them and how can they make the things that they're doing even better and even more effective? Of course, COVID put
a damper on it for sure.
But I started getting poked. Hey, are we doing that again? That was really good. What happened with that? So people started asking me to do it again. So we did it again last year. And I almost felt like starting from scratch, the response was good. And everybody felt that it was really beneficial. So now we're moving forward with DE&I and it is not going in the right direction.
Yeah.
Including is not doing what companies need or want it to do. The changes in the legislation have made it more difficult with the affirmative action basically going away. So this year, I think it's even more paramount to start talking to companies about how they should be doing this and how this can still work for them and how this still is advantageous. Let's scrap the old stuff and let's kind of come in with the new stuff. There's a different paradigm shift that we can do here that's going to still be advantageous to corporate America and worth it. And that's what this year's conference is going to focus on. I have some lawyers coming in talking about the affirmative action stuff. I have some people talking about how to do things more internally. The paradigm shift that I'm presenting in the E&I that I'm building is companies were never designed to save the world. Coca-Cola was made to make soft drinks, not social and political issues, and corporate giving is great. But we're asking them to do things that they never wanted or thought about doing. They weren't built for this. No. So we can't expect them to be successful with them. What they can be successful with, though, is how they process and how to do their corporate culture. And I'll give you a good example. Easy question. I mean, simple question. We should all have the answer to this question. It takes no thought. 20 seconds, maybe, to answer this question. Just I'll challenge you with this one. Tell me, just give me five descriptors. Just five. They could be a word, a phrase, a sentence. Five descriptors of how you want to be treated.
Treated well, respectfully, kindly, paid attention to, listened to.
Solid. You do more than most. Most people get to three. So what I found when I present that question is a lot of people at least have to stop and think about it in some capacity. It's not automatic.
Yeah.
And the most common response I get is, I never thought of that. And
really? No kidding.
Nobody ever asked me that. Nobody ever asked me that. So when I ask these questions, I've asked these to like CEOs, small business owners. And I say, if you can answer that and clearly define that in specifics for yourself, that can flow down into the entire fabric of your company in the way that everybody does things. And we're shifting to creating specific expectations. Everybody at that company shows up with a specific, they know how they're going to be treated that day. And they know how they're expected to treat everyone else that day, because that's how that company works.
That's where you're onto something. And it's like you said, DEI's definitely got its growing pains, but it's blowing up a little bit with different organizations. Some have made it very successfully, have employed it, but it needs to be reestablished. And our climate changes things. We have a political climate that's not conducive to it. So anything that's mandated or whatever, we have to rely on the public entities to lead the way and do that. And we're going to spend a little more time on that in the second part of our interview today in our conversation. But it's to your point, it's building a culture where we have a culture of acceptance with like our community. We have a diverse community. So why not have a diverse culture and workplace? Yeah, companies are supposed to make profits and money. That's their number one goal. We get it. But they also have a community responsibility. And it's managing that responsibility. And I realize small businesses have a harder time or challenge. They might have only a limited manpower they need, and they need everybody all hands on deck, so to speak, right? Depending on what you're doing. But with bigger companies, this can be part of that. And it's about being that example of the equity. We still have levels of income. I think women are still behind about 18% over men when it comes to income. Inclusion, people with disabilities. You've said yourself, I know you're fighting Parkinson's disease and you're managing that. Ragingly dyslexic. You've had to overcome some issues, but you're still functional and add a ton of value. And that's what the lesson is. Let's talk about your book for a few minutes. I thought that was really interesting. Quick and Easy World Change. Basically, in the book, you introduce a different way of thinking about changing the world for the better. And then you provide dozens of specific, tangible, quick and easy things that make a difference. Unpack some of the things that we can do. What are some of the things that we can actually do that make the world better?
Think about your neighborhood. Walk outside and think about, what does this need? Am I comfortable here? Maybe you have a great neighborhood, but is there anything you could do? When you look at your office place, what would I like to see here? it could be anything from, you know, simple thing you could volunteer for a day. A gesture of kindness could be just you see someone in your office or walking down the street that just completely looks miserable and you just smile. That's simple, just smiling at someone. Yeah, a quick donation to charity, or when you go to a register, you buy something and you can add a dollar to a charity. Okay, how easy is that? That's not that difficult. The free stuff is the stuff I like. I mean, you see people organizing things to replant their own community parks. No flowers. They get people in the neighborhood, donate some flowers. Let's go plant and make our park look a little bit nicer and keep that up. And that doesn't cost you anything to do. I mean, it's just time, and time is a precious commodity. But heck, when you use it right, it's a commodity that does pay back, especially when it's in your own community. And you think of how things directly or indirectly affect you. It could be something just simple, easy stuff, like giving a homeless person an apple out of your lunch. It's not that hard.
It's paying attention, I think, like, to your point, and just looking around where there's opportunities, because there's plenty of them around. I started thinking about it as we were doing some background for the show, and something my wife and I like to do is when we go through a Starbucks drive-in, we'll go through and we'll just say, hey, what did the person behind us order? Now, if they ordered like 30 of this and 20 of those, then we just say, okay, have a nice day, right? But if somebody ordered, you know, a lemon loaf and a latte, we just pay for it. And then we go through, and we got the idea from watching some, you know, YouTubes or whatever. I think the record was started at 7 a.m. and went all day. Like, everybody did it all day long, and it becomes contagious, right? And those are the things that kind of make you smile. Yeah. And when you do certain things, I'm with a group that we do charity, and at Christmas time, we'll go into Walmart or whatever, and we watch families, and we will go and pay for their presents, their thing, but when they're up at the till and the bill, and just to watch the expression, you can't help but feel good. And so it's a win-win, and it goes on for a long time, and it starts to spiral, and it becomes contagious. So when people start to do those things, you see more of it. And when people witness those good things, then it kind of unlocks that for them, doesn't it?
It does.
It's contagious.
And I love it when you do it. Like, I love neighborhood stuff or things people do in the office. And this new one that I've heard, a friend of mine started a lunchtime walking club in their office. And it's with people working remote a lot. People aren't around each other as much to socialize, or just, you know, there's no water cooler talk anymore. But now people are coming around more to jump in the lunchtime walking club. And they're seeing people that they really haven't seen in, like, literally like years, and catching up with them just like a half hour walk when it's not completely horrible outside. So it's a little cool thing that you do, and that just makes everybody's life a little bit better.
Yeah. You know, we had one of our guests, Steve Foran, talked about gratitude in the workplace, and he was on one of our episodes here recently. And he said he goes into his corporate meetings and he gets his corporate clients before they start all their big meetings where everybody's judging everybody and judging their ideas and whatever, to say one thing they're grateful for. And it goes around, and he said, by the time everybody's done, which only takes a few minutes, the atmosphere is very positive. It's very upbeat. People are respectful, and it does become contagious. And so I know you believe that every living person on the planet can make a significant difference, and it leads to this massive cumulative effect. You call it the ripple effect. Unpack that a little bit for everybody.
So it's like the old concept of the butterfly effect. The butterfly flaps its wings and by one side of the ocean, and the other side of the ocean is a tidal wave. The things that we do reverberate. So if you do something that makes somebody's day a little bit better, and maybe top of my head example, you're in line at Starbucks with somebody who's in sales, and they have a bill coming up that, and they're not doing well, whatever, their day is a mess, you know, they're fighting with their wife. It's just, they're just dreading trying to sell today. They need to. I mean, if you can come up with maybe any kind of a dumb joke or just a comment or just, hey, have a good day.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the person goes into that sales meeting this afternoon just a little bit lighter, maybe a little less on his mind. All of a sudden, he makes that good sale. All of a sudden, he's in a better mood to go home and talk to his wife. It just reverberates.
It is a cumulative effect. And then there's simple things. One thing, my wife's really good at this, and she got me doing it now, is we'll go into, say, even a supermarket. We're in a cashier. We engage with them. We talk to them. Their name tag is right there. So this is a no-brainer. And we'll just engage with them. And you see them smile, and they get to know your name. And then every time you're coming through, they start to know. So every experience that we have lining up at the supermarket, it's a good one because we know the team. Yeah. And it's a team effort. And it is those small things that you're talking about. It's just a matter of engaging with people. If somebody looks nice, you can make a nice comment without, you know, being weird. If they're doing something good, you can talk to them and say, hey, that looks really cool. Or, hey, I just saw you do that. Very nice. Like you said, it's those little tiny things. And we don't realize the effect. We don't know what they went through that day. I was walking down the hall the other day, and one of our neighbors, his wife, she was having some issues, but broke her hips and was on an intensive care. And we thought she was going to be just fine. And he was coming up to his 60th anniversary. And I just, hey, Bob, how's it going? And he goes on and tells me. And then the next day, his wife passes. How do you know? And I'm watching him walk, and he looks sad. He looks down. So if we pay attention and we go outside of ourselves, I think the problem is, as a culture, we're very self-absorbed. This is an observation. I think we're very self-absorbed as people, generally speaking, not everyone. And it's a matter of developing a little more empathy in our lives and looking at other people and going, all right, what can we do for these people? You know, one of my little mantras that I try and do that puts me into that, because it's not my natural tendency. It's not my natural place to go for me. So I started asking myself every single day, before I start my day, is who can I be a hero to today? Who can I be a hero to today? And it's a small thing. It doesn't mean it's a big thing. It might be sending something, might be a comment, even liking somebody's post and making a positive comment instead of trolling them, even saying something, hey, thanks for having the courage to post that. What a great story. Well, that was inspiring. Those things start to foster from an inside out and we get more positive expects. You call it a world changer's mindset. How do we develop that world changer's mindset?
What are you doing today? And how are you going to make that better for you and somebody else? Wake up every morning. Like you said, it's an attitude of just, you want to live a lifestyle of kindness. Kindness just becomes a lifestyle. And it's easier to do if you just think of what's one thing that I can look for today. I'm going to think of it. It's not going to be in my head, but I'm going to look for one maybe simple little good thing that I can do. What's my act of kindness for today? And that's how it starts. And then it just, I'm telling you, you do this for a while, it just becomes second nature. You don't think about thinking about it anymore. You just become used to doing it. And you start to see more and more opportunities the more you do. It just starts with, okay, I'm going to wake up today. I'm going to go out into the world and I'm just going to find one little thing. I'm going to look for things going on around me that maybe I could do something here or there to make somebody's minute a little bit of a better minute or somebody's day a little bit of a better day. Some little thing that you could just do one a day. And then all of a sudden you start to see this whole world.
It's a mushroom out.
Yeah.
I think it's how you focus. It's kind of like, let's say you're going to go buy a truck. You want to go buy a Ford F-150. You've narrowed it down to a black Ford F-150. And that's what you decide you're going to get. All of a sudden you start seeing them everywhere. And you just see them over here. You see them over there. And it's, you're just getting ready for them going, man, I got to get this thing. I think what you're saying is the same as that, is as we start to do tasks and do good things for others and look outside of ourselves, they just start showing up left, right, and center, because they're all around us, aren't they?
They are. And I'll tell you, you know, another entrance. I don't think we were able to talk about the idea of social capital enough in the book, because it's such a big honking thing that it's hard to fit into the book. But it's just the idea of, I'm a classic example of, I became the guy that knew the guy that knew the guy. Everybody owed me something, some kind of favor, because I helped somebody do any networking.
Yeah.
I helped people get clients and whatever they
need. A great connector. Yeah.
And so when I started having success in networking was when I stopped talking, or not, I didn't stop talking, but my goal was walking into a networking event saying, what can I do for everybody in here? How can I be of value to this room? And you develop the social capital by doing good things. And then it gives you a little bit more of a headway to even do more stuff. It encourages everybody around you to want to do more good stuff, because they see all the success and happiness that it brings you. Who doesn't want to be the guy that knows the guy that knows the guy?
And you've got lots of gems, like I say, in your book, that are little things that we don't think of that just stir that thought and go, hey, I can do that. You say we should focus on interconnected. I love practicing optimism. I want to talk about that a little bit. Enter the win-win zone. Striving for balance, which is always good. Listen with care, which we could all do more of. Yeah. Enjoy giving and receiving and make a game of giving. Let's start with making a game of giving. How does that work?
That's really like the whole playing it forward thing, like you did at Starbucks. It's how can you set someone else up to do this? If I give them this trinket and say, pay it forward, how will you get it? You get that. You give that trinket, but you get knowing that you did something nice, and then you get the idea of knowing that someone else is going to do something nice, and then someone else is going to do something nice. And you've created something. Like, you push that snowball down the hill, and it's going to keep rolling and rolling into some kind of big old boulder of kindness.
Yeah, and it is a contagion, for sure. And all you have to do is try it once to see it, and you'll get sold on that one. But don't be attached to anything. I think once we give what we're giving, we have to give it without attachment, or hopefully that it comes back. Our job is over when it's done. There's no strings attached to that present, right? And so, because some people probably come back and go, I'll get my own coffee, or I'll do whatever. And those are the miserable people. But they're, but as a good rule, it's more about you. I remember one time I opened up the door for somebody and they said to me, this was kind of in the height of things, you know, in the 80s. I said, I can get my own door. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not doing it for you. And they looked up, because I was just being a little snarky back at the whatever. Who are you doing it for then? I said, I'm doing it for me. I like who I am when I do it.
Yeah.
And they just walked on, but everyone else said, thank you. And that was it. So there are people where it's not going to make a difference, for sure. So make a game of giving. That's interesting. How about practicing optimism? How do we do that?
There's two sides to every coin. And I think that having Parkinson's has become a great opportunity for me to do more of that.
Interesting.
You know, I think of the perspective that this has given me on life. When you have this weird ticking clock, you really start to think about some things that are really, really important to you and what your values are. So this has taught me the big one, just be more in the moment. I'm more in the moment now than I've ever been in my entire life. And it is such an amazing place to be. Are you really present if you're not, you know, if you're not there? My mind is here. My heart is here. I'm here. And we think about it as a simple thing, but it's not. Like, you hang out with friends and there's always things in the back of people's minds. It's hard for people to really truly be present. I've learned that, okay, I'm going to make every moment and I'm going to turn it into a story in my head later on and think about the value that story has in that moment. And that's made me a better listener. It's made me kind of a less reactive person. I sit back and take things in more now. And it's made me more calculated because I think about things like, where's my time going today? You know, what's important today? What do I really need to do?
And what's essential? Yeah.
What's not so essential? Right.
Yeah.
So what is there things that I need to stress about? Or are these things really worth stressing about? Can I put them over? It's making me better in so many facets.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, a little more reflective. You're looking at things and going, what's adding to my purpose? Because there's only so much you can do. So because of that, you're having to filter. And so you've got these filters that are protecting you, but they'll also meet your objectives and purpose, right?
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company. And now back to my conversation with Pancho Timmins.
You say in the book, you actually have a formula, success is kindness in action.
Yes.
Unpack that one for us.
So that goes back to the realm of social capital.
Yeah.
So that kindness that I've tried to give other people has come back to me in ways that have helped me personally, professionally as well. So when I need things, I know people that would be happy to do me a favor or help me out. So the kinder I get and the more people that I can have a positive impact on, these people remember me, a lot of them. And then I have that as like, I kind of have like that resource. You know, I have that connection with them. We have that bridge where we can do things that we need to help each other. And that is like a huge avenue to help you become successful in anything that you're trying to do. You build this network of support personally and professionally. And that's huge because nobody ever does anything alone. Nobody ever got successful at anything by themselves. They had some people that are willing to kind of help them and be there for them. And by being kind, like genuinely kind, you're going to have that. Like if you're there for people, people are going to want to be there for you. So kindness, the action that you do, the things that you do, ultimately, that's going to come back to you in bank of social capital. And if you're rich in social capital, you can get a lot more done than you can if you're just a complete jerk.
Let's talk about kindness and how we can be more kind. Now, you say in your book that kindness isn't weakness.
Yeah.
And kindness is a strength. How can we be more kind?
Yeah, well, kindness is a strength. It's quite the opposite. Because when you think of like what it takes to really truly be genuinely kind, you have to be vulnerable. You have to be okay with other people's reactions. There's a term called outcome independence, where I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And the outcome is not the issue. I'm doing what I'm doing. Because you have to be kind of outcome independent. If people don't reciprocate, it's not a personal thing. It's not a you thing, but it's okay.
Sure.
You know, it may sting a little bit sometimes, but that's okay. Yeah, that is your strength right there. That's just a strength. Yeah. So how do you be more kind? It's just waking up and just seeing what's around you. And then gratitude has a lot to do with that. I mean, you have things to be grateful for.
It's a great way to start your day with gratitude and then look for opportunities to be kind to somebody. Because again, you don't know what they're going through. Well, it sounds like you're really just coming and approaching everything from a contribution point of view and even from a networking point of view. And this is one of the things we talk about as one of the premises of becoming preferred or the emotional favorite, whether we're in sales or marketing or business owners or whatever, is we want to do kind things. People will react to us in a positive way when something's done in a kindly way, not just from a policy point of view. So even as corporations, say there's a policy and a rule, you could stick to the rule, but if that's not the kind thing to do at that moment, do the kind thing. And so not just because it's good from a PR perspective, but because it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it right there. There's some common sense and empathy that come with every rule. You can't be too rigid with things. That anything involving people, you got to have some wiggle room to really be effective.
Absolutely. Hey, let's transition into part of the area of your work. And you've been a real advocate and instrumental in redefining diversity, equity, inclusion consulting in America. And like I say, you host conferences. And it's been going through some challenges, for sure. I think you've said it needs to be blown up and reinvented because it didn't happen well, because it was something new. And it's like anything where we've had some social change, it's taken time. There's all kinds of things where it just is slow going. And depending on the political climate, there's things we can't talk about in universities. There's things we can't talk about in schools. There's books that are being brought. We live in some weird times where it's just not out there. And DEI, it's kind of like if you were for DEI, it became political. And, you know, if you were for DEI, you were on the left side of things. And if you were against DEI, you were on the right side of things, or whatever the case is. What are some of the most common misconceptions about DEI that you encounter, and how do you address them in your work?
Oh, man. So I'll give you some examples. And I don't like to throw people under the bus. I won't. But Coca-Cola had a training on how to be less white.
Really?
Yeah. So like, imagine if I came to you, Michael, and said, we need to have a training on how to be less Michael.
Yeah.
And don't worry, everyone's going to be there.
Yeah.
You know? So it's fine.
That's incredible. Yeah.
We're trying to get everybody to be more like Joe. We're not just going to say that, but we're trying to get everybody to be more like Joe. But when we walk in there, the first line is going to be, let's be less like Michael and more like Joe. Don't worry. Everybody's going to be there. That's awkward for you, right? And Joe. Right,
exactly.
Nobody in that room is comfortable. And it's really the antithesis of what we're trying to do with DE&I. We're not trying to make anybody want to be less of anything. We're trying to help people be fully who they are and what they are, not less. So that it's kind of odd how DE&I is taking that flip. And I think either there's this really thing that I can't wrap my head around, this urge to take everything that's been created as a shield and start to use it as a sword. When we start to weaponize these things that we've created to protect us, they're never going to work right because they're not weapons. These are shields. We have this tendency to weaponize some things. And a lot of that has happened in DE&I. And of course, it's not going to be effective when you do that. It's not a weapon. No. So people are doing too much of that. And it's just kind of gone a little bit off the rails because of just the ineffectiveness of some people. There's another example of in school in California. The head of DE&I was a professor who was an African-American woman, and she was fired because somebody thought she was racist against Black people.
You can't win. Or if you're the Black HR director or Brown HR director, and then you're accused of having an agenda. So like you say, they become weaponized where Mike just wants to be Mike, right? And what we need to be doing is teaching people acceptance of other people that don't look like us, sound like us, and have a different perspective. And I think that's the key.
It comes back to that golden rule thing, those five questions of what do you want? What are five descriptors of what you need to feel treated well as a human being? It goes back to just that simple concept of the golden rule and what is it in your office and your surroundings? What are the things that make everyone feel accepted? What are those basic things? And those should be the core values that just ooze into everything in your company. It's just be embedded and intertwined in everything that you do as a company. And it's not. Right now, these things are being done, you know, kind of as a window dressing thing. A lot of the stuff that they're just checking boxes. And then they're wondering why it's not effective. I compared, sadly, it's kind of like the Titanic right now. It's sunk. Corporations are in their life rafts paddling away. And a lot of D&I professionals are, you know, we're doggy paddling in the icy freezing water. And I don't know if everybody even recognizes that. But you could see the cut in DE&I jobs. You could see them either being transitioned into other HR positions or just being eliminated because it has shown some ineffectiveness. And with the changes in the affirmative action laws, companies now have, they've reverberated into corporate America. Companies now have this easy way to stop in the end the stuff. And the other issue, there's legislation now that if you do DE&I, you're subject to litigation. And right. Instead, the opposite used to be when it was a shield. If you didn't do some DE&I, if you weren't trying, then you are subject to litigation. Somehow become the opposite. We've almost become the opposite of what we were trying to do in the first place. So we need to kind of rein this back in and go back to some basics. Just basic humanity. What are the things that you as a CEO or your C-suite people think that they want to be accepted? And then ask your company the same thing. And when we collect data, this is another thing I harp on. Data has become so, it's always subjective. You know, when you give a person this chance of like, oh, how happy are you with this company? 1 to 5. 1 being you love it. 2 being you're applying for other jobs right now. You have solid answers. Most of your answers are not going to be 1 and they're not going to be 5. You have no idea what 2, 3, and 4 really are. Somebody's 3 might be someone else's 4. So that data, it's not great. I mean, the right question is you maybe ask your whole office, what are those 5 things that they feel like they need to be a respected person in that office.
I think it should be part of every business's constitution is just, how do we want to be treated here? When you ask that question, you probably get similar answers from foundational answers. They want to be treated with respect, or they don't know. They're like, oh, they're not even used to it. Right. Do you know what's interesting is, like anything, we've just had a couple of states, Florida, Utah just passed a law against DEI being taught in universities and government. And really, like, it's almost embarrassing. And the irony in my mind is one of the biggest institutions that actually does practice DEI in a good way is the military. You go into the military and they embrace it. They always have that initial pushback, but now you can be anything in the military. I remember I was in a conversation one time talking about four or five military gentlemen, guys who just got back from overseas. They were serving in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and they've been there for a long time, 12, 15 years of service. And we got on the subject of gays in the military, when bringing gay people into the military. And I said, what's your thought on that? What was that? And one guy who's the leader of the group, he goes, oh, absolutely. He goes, absolutely, no problem. That's just where we're at. He goes, let me tell you a story. He said, we were driving in Iraq. We were in a convoy, and our convoy came under attack, and all the vehicles got disabled. And I was in the lead vehicle. He was in the lead Humvee, and he got disabled. And he's now pinned down, and they're shooting at him from every which direction. And there are a couple of other guys were hurt, and a couple of guys have been shot and killed. And he's just stuck. He's just stuck there. And he said, all of a sudden, somebody grabs me from the back, and it was this big 6'2" Canadian gentleman who was gay, and said, I got you, chief, and grabbed him and pulled him back and pulled him in, covered him with machine gun fire so he could get back, and saved his life. And tears are running down his face. And he said, anyone who wants to come and serve is my brother or my sister, and I'm there and I will protect them. And that's in the military. We would not think to see that, you know, there's a model. There's a model. It's kindness. It's that being in the trenches. And I know when that happens with organizations, or they go through things or shared common experiences, that makes a difference that way. But it's being able to make it more the norm in the culture rather than, hey, this is the flavor of the week.
Yeah. One of my biggest complaints is that DEI has become very reactive to what's going on. Companies have become really reactive to what's going on. And it's a focus of external trying to solve the world's problems. Companies aren't meant to do that. So if you keep these things internal, it's a great example. They will work better. You know, companies worry about in their office and not the whole world. It's going to work better for you. And one other point about the military, I agree with you, but the military is, it's completely objective. Like everything they do, it's objective. There's no, you know, it is or it is not. Right. And I think made kind of a big difference in a lot of ways in their policies. And then they also have this kind of way of individually dealing with some things on a common sense kind of level when they need to. There's almost a protocol really for dealing with these anomalies that happen. So because of that, it's just very clear. The expectations are very, very clear of what everybody does, how everybody treats everybody. There's no real question about it. So if you're gay in the military, you're going to be treated as everybody else who works. No question.
Which is all we're looking for, right? That's where, and that's why I think your book, Quick and Easy World Change, Fixing Our Messed Up World One Small Act at a Time, is really a foundation for all of these things. And whether you're focused on DEI, whether you're focused on culture and corporate culture, attitude, employees, hiring people, we're in an interesting time where people are quite quitting. They're leaving their organizations. Companies can't get a good employees. People don't want to work. They want to work remotely. And it's like, what's the kind thing to do? And how can we monetize that? How can we make it functionally work and maintain productivity, which we can, but also that social community or sense of community that you're speaking of, where we embrace everyone and not be scared of things. And a lot of times people are just scared of change. I remember when I was up here in Canada and gay marriage, it was a thing 20 years before the U.S. had it. And we heard all this story. All these other countries were doing just fine with it, like no big deal.
This is interesting. So I have some friend I was talking to, and they did statistics on divorce now, right? And this is pretty recent. Gay men have the highest success rate. They don't get divorced. The second is just heterosexual couples, and lesbians have the highest divorce rate. So,
really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Hey, we all have to go through it. Why shouldn't you have the same obligations I do? Yeah, exactly. And who cares? And it just adds to the fabric of our culture. It's not the demise of our culture. It's growing that culture. And when you're in a place where you do have acceptance and we appreciate people for who they are and what they are, I think it makes all the difference. Quickly tell us, we're going to have some information in the show notes on your conference and your website. You got a conference coming up in midsummer, conference 2024.
Your shoot end of summer, we'll have a date locked down by the end of this month at the latest.
Got it.
And going to cover everything that you really need to know to continue, or all the reasons that a company would want to keep doing DE&I. There's still reasons to do this. It's still productive. It's still valuable.
And how to do it.
And how to do it. This is your how-to guide to keep this thing productive and still be positive on your office. And the people that I would challenge the most to be there are the people that don't think it works. I'll be there because it does. It still does. We just start doing it in this new paradigm shift and it will work.
Who's doing it right now? Can you point to anyone and name names?
I won't, but you'll see them when you look at my list of conference speakers.
Okay, good. The information will all be on there. It'll be PanchoTimmons.com. Pancho, thanks. The book's called Quick and Easy World Change, Fixing Our Messed Up World, One Small Act at a Time, available where you get your books on Amazon, or you can order directly from your website. Thank you so much for being our guest, shedding a little light on this. Good luck with your challenges. I know you're embracing them head on and really appreciate you doing this. And you're a good example of what this is. And we can all learn a little something as it helps us become preferred in our markets. We become preferred to ourselves as well, because we're going to like who we are better. And that just, like you said, has that butterfly effect. It has that ripple effect. And we get a cumulative effect of just kindness. We live in a better place. Pancho, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. It was a good time. Thank you.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.